This Dharma Talk is brought to you by the Chicago Zen Meditation Community. Learn about us and our teacher, Miyoshi Thompson, at zenchicago.org.
Good evening. Just looking ahead 1 week. Next Monday is the 8th, which is the day in Soto Zen we celebrate Buddha's birth. And we have a very nice ceremony when we do that, which is we have a little statue of the baby Buddha, and we christen it with sweet tea. So it's a very lovely ceremony. You're all welcome to come next Monday and join us. We were in our Saturday study group this past Saturday, and in this group we study Dogen. Dogen is a 13th century teacher in Japan, who is the founder of our school, and our lineage comes from him in Japan. And he was quoting another teacher whose name was Yunju, who said, "When you study the matter of Buddha Dharma, stop having your mind stuck on it." This teaching really grabbed me. When you study Buddha Dharma, you can't let your mind get stuck on anything you think you know. And I found myself thinking, how can I help you guys not get caught in, as you study the Buddha way? We learn something, and we think we understand it, and then we run across another teaching that doesn't fit with what we think we understand. It's inevitable, if we're practicing well, to have that kind of experience. We should have it repeatedly. We should, time after time, find the limits of our practice and our understanding so we can take a step forward from there into true practice and true understanding. In order not to get stuck in the Buddha Dharma, we have to welcome being wrong. And we have to be flexible enough to learn from the study of each moment. Each moment will teach us more about Buddha's truth. And for the last dozen years or so, I've been teaching that the core of Zen resides in asking two questions. The first question is, what is right here? Whatever is going on in Zen, it starts out with that question, with grounding ourselves in the present moment and looking at it with our understanding, actually more than with our understanding, with our openness to see what is it teaching us. And the second question is, after we've asked what is right here, second question is, well, what does it require of me? What does it need? Is there a way that I can help whatever is right here? Maybe even could I help it in the Buddha way? As I was thinking about these things, I thought about an essay that our teacher Dogen wrote. This is a short essay that kind of addresses the theme of penetrating each moment and learning from it. The essay is called "The King Asks for Sayandava." It's not his most famous essay. It's not his most poetical essay, but it has some of his best teaching devices. In this essay, he presents koans to us, you know, to penetrate. And he does his best to challenge our everyday understandings. He even goes on one of his characteristic rants about the inadequate teaching and practice he found when he was studying in China. But he does this to point us in the direction of authentic practice. And so I'd like to tell you about this essay of his. As I said, it's called "The King Asks for Sayandava." And it's a teaching from an old Mahayana sutra, the Parinibbana Sutra. Sayandava is mythical, but it's a kingdom that's supposedly known for four unique resources. One is that it has an abundance of fresh water from springs and clear flowing streams. And another is that the artisans there are very skilled at making pottery. Third is that the horses that are raised in Sayandava are very fast. And fourth is what do you do with salt? They mine salt, or you mine salt, right? Yeah, okay. They mine salt, so they have salt. It's one of their products. And the king declared that all of these products, which he was so proud of, be called by the name of the country, Sayandava. So each product had the same name, Sayandava. And you'd think this would lead to a lot of trouble, but his attendants were very skillful. So when the king came into the palace from having been outside, he would call for Sayandava. And the attendant who was there would understand that he'd just been outside in the dusty world, and we should bring water so he could wash his hands and we could wash his feet. And then when he was sitting down to a meal, he might call Sayandava. And they would take it to mean he wanted some salt to flavor the food. After the meal, he might call for Sayandava, and they would take it to mean bring a cup so he could quench his thirst. And when he wanted to travel away from the palace and he got on his traveling clothes, you know, he would call Sayandava, and his clever attendants would bring him a horse. So this seems like a terrible way to communicate. I'm sure it's not best business practices in any organization that we know of. But Dogen said this was very important. It's so important that this story of the king wanting the Sayandava and the courtier bringing it has been transmitted just like the Dharma robe. The Dharma robe is the symbol of the teaching. And in early Buddhism, it was passed from teacher to student to his student to his student. So it was the symbol of the continuance of the Dharma. And Dogen said that this story has been passed on just like that. So he saw in it some core feature of the Dharma. And we can kind of see it. If we take on the principle of Sayandava, it requires us to be open, to understand empathically, and to resonate with this moment, to see what it requires of us. And the practice of Sayandava requires that we use more than the discursive differentiating mind that we normally use all the time. Last week, I was mentioning that in ancient times, this mind, our kind of normal reasoning mind, was called vijnana. But the practice of Sayandava requires that we go beyond that. It requires our heart mind. In Pali, the word is citta. And we were trying to think last week, does English have a word that combines heart and mind? Does anybody know of one? Nobody knew it last week, but maybe someone does. The closest I could come, as I thought about it this week, was citta means whole being. If we arouse the mind, citta, we bring our whole being to the situation. So Sayandava requires us to awaken our whole being, our rational mind and our intuitive mind and our empathic sense. So this story of Sayandava is an encouragement for us to practice with our whole being. Don't leave anything out. In Sayandava, this resonance develops between us in the moment, between even different individuals. There's a kind of a call and response that come up together. And that mutual participation, like with the king and his attendant, are both needed for Sayandava, both the asking and the offering. Dogen said, who doesn't know about taking up a staff and taking up a whisk? The monks in his day knew, we may not know, but the monks in his day knew that these two activities were required to move forward in the Dharma. The monks would take up their walking staff, and they would walk to another temple to practice with that group there and to see what the teacher was like there and to see if they could awaken in their practice there. And the teachers would take up their whisk or their nyoi, which is the same idea, as a symbol of offering the Dharma. And so they had this mutual aspiration, this mutual inspiration to participate in bringing out the Dharma together. And without that mutual aspiration they had of taking up both the staff and the whisk, we would not be here. And this Dharma that is only passed on person to person would never even have made it to Japan, much less to Chicago Avenue. This practice of Sayandava goes along with the idea that you can't get this Dharma just by studying words. It's like our forms in the Zendo. It's not enough just to know the formula for how to do the forms, you know, like when you bow and how you bow. We could, but we could bow to each other just by following the directions of bowing. And the directions are, you know, you put your palms together, fingertips on a level with your nose, your elbows are up, and you keep this position as you bend to each other. So that's the formula for bowing. But in that activity, it's not heart-mind that's doing the bow. It's just, you know, the front part of our head that's doing the bow. It's not the aspiration to awaken. It's not the desire to offer the Dharma. I'm not even sure it's even a bow if it's so mechanical. You know, we think do this and then do that. I think a bow like that might convey, I'm afraid of making a mistake. Or maybe it'll convey, I'm showing off. But it probably won't convey what a whole being bow conveys. Because if we do that same action, completely engaged and really grateful to each other for the help that each offers to our practice of the Dharma, that's different. That kind of bow is just everyday Zen. Dogen said about our practice, it cannot be done by those who try to keep a stringed instrument in tune by gluing down its movable bridges. He was talking about a koto, you know, the Japanese instrument, stringed instrument. And I've never played one, but apparently the bridges are not fixed. And you move them and put them in position so the instrument is in tune. And if you glue them down after you've done that, the instrument will never be in tune again, because you have to be able to move it to adjust to this situation in this moment. You have to be able to practice sayandava with the koto. So consider the practice that we have. We call this role Jisha. Jisha in Zendo, Jisha's job is pretty straightforward. He helps the teacher. And in this context, it doesn't require a lot. Mostly the Jisha helps me set up for our talk. Today was Jackson, was Jisha. And well, what do I need to give a talk? Well, I need my notes, I need my Zoom, I need a cup of tea so I can refresh myself. And that's it. But if Jisha were to set me up for the talk before I even came to my place, like he'd put the table with the laptop right in front of my place, I couldn't get to my seat because I'd have to like climb over this table in order to get there. And it's always an issue about how and when do you give me the tea? Jackson had a really good solution that he tried last week and did again this week, which is he put the tea down kind of far away. And then he put the table in front of me, so I had the table. And then I couldn't reach the tea. But he brought the tea close so I could reach it. If he had put the tea close at the beginning, then undoubtedly the sleeve of my robe would have gone into the teacup, and or I would have knocked it over with my knee. But he thought about what was needed in the situation, and he arranged what he did to meet that need. There is a form for doing this, but I prefer not to teach it, actually, because I think it's much better to learn what to do by observing closely what is needed. By observing what is right here and seeing what is required. That way, you not only solve the problem of what should I do, but you also learn to figure out how to solve that problem the next time it arises. This is sayandava. Sayantava is a model for how we help each other. In this situation, how we learn the Buddha way together, how we engage whole being, and how we make mistake after mistake after mistake. Suzuki Roshi, you know him, the teacher who founded San Francisco Zen Center, wrote Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, yeah. So Suzuki Roshi told a story about when he was studying with his teacher, and his teacher had a guest in his room and they were talking, and then I think Suzuki Roshi was going in to remove the teacups. They had had tea, and Suzuki Roshi was going in to remove the teacups, and there were sliding panels, you know, kind of like this kind of panel. Sliding panels, and you slide one way, and it opens this side, and slide the other way, it opens that side. Okay. So he went to his master's room, and he opened the door, and his master and the guest were right there, and his master said, "You stupid boy, what are you doing opening this door? Don't open this door, open the other one." "Okay." He said, "Hi." Went over, closed that door, opened this door, went in and got the tea and came out. He thought to himself, "Oh, I shouldn't open the left-hand door." So the next time Master had a guest, he knew, "I'll open the right door." But he opened the right door, and Master and guest were right there in front of the right door. The master said, "I've told you this before, don't open that door, open the other door." And now Suzuki Roshi was really confused. He was making mistake after mistake, and the mistake he was making is that he was trying to develop a rule, and he didn't have the right sense of what was really going on in this situation. Finally, he realized that if he looked before he went to his master's room, he could see the shadows of people, you know, kind of reflecting or showing through the rice paper of the shoji screen. And so he could tell that way where the people were. And so he would know not to open the door and disturb the people that were talking right there, but to open the other door. So this was Suzuki practicing Sayandaba. How do we figure out what's really right for this situation? Dogen said, "Those who practice together with Buddha journey with the Sayandaba. Those who do not practice together with Buddha should buy some sandals and take one step of the journey to understand it." Sayandava is a model for how we approach the Dharma. We do it wholeheartedly. We have to actually walk the path. And we have to hear what's behind the words. The words itself are not enough to get us to the truth of practice. We learn the teachings, but we must also penetrate the authentic experience that the teaching points to. So, you know, we tell a story about how Buddha meditated under the Bodhi tree until he awakened. And this conveys a part of the truth, but it also conveys a falsehood. We might think that we meditate in order to awaken, or that we could become a Buddha by sitting. But our meditation is not about accomplishing anything, including awakening. When Buddha awakened, his only vow was, "I'm going to just sit here until I awaken." Really wasn't, "I'm going to try to do this, I'm going to try to accomplish that." It was, I'll just be here. And whatever happens will happen. So Dogen said that this is Sayadaw, this is the core of our practice. He said, those who are called elders in monasteries in China, however, have never dreamed of the Sayadaw. How painful, how terrible that the ancestral way is declining. Do not be negligent in your endeavor of the way. Receive and maintain the Buddha ancestor's life vein. For example, ask, what is Buddha? This was a question that students in about 9th century China asked their teachers a lot. They would go to a new monastery and ask the new teacher, what is Buddha? So Dogen says, to maintain the life vein, we should ask, what is Buddha? We should inquire about the Dharma. And he says, or we should say, mind is itself Buddha, which was a famous teacher's answer to this question. Which means we should do our best to express our understanding of the Dharma, the understanding that we have right here, right now. Maybe it's not 100% of the Dharma. But that's not what matters. What matters is that the effort is 100%. The effort to express what we know in our heart is wholehearted. And that's the meaning of Sayadaw, the wholehearted engagement of practitioners with each other, trying to clarify together the Buddha Dharma. Sayadaw is when we all play our part in discovering the Dharma. And it strikes me that it's not only in Zendo that we need to generate this wholehearted effort. I'd like to hear from you about any experiences you've had in your lives that this story reminds you of. It seemed to me that people who have children have a lot of practice in figuring out what is Sayadaw now. I'll tell you one anecdote. I was a little boy, and I guess I was in a kind of independent frame of mind at that point. I forget how old I was. But I had learned that you can't hear other people's thoughts, and they can't hear your thoughts. So I thought this was the greatest thing. I could think whatever I wanted, and nobody knew. My mother told me at one point, you know I can read your mind. And I said, no, you can't. And I really was afraid that she could. But we were then going through the grocery store. And you know, in the checkout line, they have all the candy bars there. And I was looking and I was thinking, gee, a Kit Kat bar would be really good right now. But I didn't say anything. But my mother said, it's too close to lunchtime to have candy. And I realized she could read my mind. So sometimes Sayadaw is not appreciated, but mostly we try to use that ability that we have to discern what is really needed in the situation to help others.